Good evening. I'm Midge Woolsey, and tonight we're bringing you a live broadcast of the Orpheus Chamber Orchestra at Carnegie Hall. We're going to hear three pieces on tonight's broadcast. One of them, the Brooke Violin Concerto, features the young violinist that we're hearing in the background right now. That's 21-year-old Ryu Goto. With me tonight is my colleague Terrence McKnight, who has a special backstage pass. Hi, Terrence. What's going on?
I think you can probably hear what's going on back here, Mitch. We're getting tuned. Members of the Orpheus Chamber Orchestra are sitting to my left. And just a few minutes, we're going to start this concert. And this really gives me an opportunity to catch up with some of the Orpheans and get some of the scoop on what's going on with the orchestra. For example, this music by that we'll hear by Max Brooke, played by Ryu Goto. Well, the orchestra talked about there was a negotiation, you know, would Goto play Mendelssohn, would he play Mozart, would he play Brooke? And finally they decided that he would play Brooke as a way to introduce him to working with the Orpheus Chamber Orchestra. They thought this was the perfect piece to accompany Stravinsky and Beethoven. So that's what's going on backstage, and we'll hear all of this music coming up soon. We've got Beethoven's Second Symphony on the program and a Stravinsky octet, and we're hearing some of those rhythms back here as they're practicing da-da-da-da-da, which really indicates Stravinsky going into that neoclassical style.
Tonight's performance is broadcast live through the generous support of MetLife Foundation, official radio broadcast sponsor of Orpheus Chamber Orchestra. Now, Terrence, you mentioned that we'll be hearing the octet by Stravinsky. Orpheus has played a piece of Stravinsky on each of its Carnegie Hall concerts this season, and this piece was written in 1922. Stravinsky wrote it after having a vivid dream, and in this dream he saw himself in a small room surrounded by a small group of instrumentalists playing some very attractive music. Now, I'm certainly not a dream interpreter, but what Stravinsky came up with is the lovely octet for winds that we're about to hear. And Stravinsky himself conducted the debut of the work in 1923 in Paris. This was the first time that he conducted one of his own works. This was also the first appearance of his neoclassical style, a period that would last until the mid-1950s. During this time, Stravinsky wrote for smaller ensembles, chamber and choral works, pieces for the piano, and of course, winds.
Yeah, you know, Stravinsky had, this was the first time he conducted one of his pieces because Koussevitzky had conducted one of his pieces prior to Stravinsky writing this, and he was so disappointed in the way Koussevitzky conducted, so he decided, you know what, I'm going to take control of my own piece, because this music, Stravinsky said, is not emotive. He said it wasn't about emotion, so he's going into this neoclassical style, as you mentioned. But there's also a bit of gossip that accompanies this work as well, Midge. I know, you know, Stravinsky was able to have a dream about this piece and remember the music, and he got up and composed it. But there's also another story. It was around 1920, and there was a woman who was an artist. She was a dancer, and she worked with Serge Diaghilev, one of Stravinsky's collaborators. And Stravinsky met her in 1920. He was married at the time. He was married to his cousin, and she was, you know, she had been married twice, and they just hit it off. And they started a relationship, and after Stravinsky's wife passed away, he ended up marrying Vera. Her name was Vera de Beausset, and they came to the States, came here to America, and got married around 1940. And he revised the piece that we'll hear shortly after that union.
You are in the right place, Terrence, because you are linked in with the gossip. Very interesting. The work that we're about to hear is scored for flute, clarinet, two bassoons, two trumpets in A and C, and tenor and bass trombones. And I also hear that there's a chance that you might talk to one of the horn players after the piece, right, Terrence?
I'm going to try. I'm going to do my best to get a hold of Frank Morelli. Frank has written a book, an excerpt book, where he looks at all of Stravinsky's writings for bassoon. So he has excerpts of everything that Stravinsky wrote for the bassoon. And so I'm going to try to get him after this performance and so he can give us a little insight into Stravinsky as a bassoon writer.
Well, the wind players of the Orpheus Chamber Orchestra are on stage at Carnegie Hall now to perform Igor Stravinsky's octet. And you are hearing this live on WQXR 105.9 FM and WQXR.org.
Thank you.
Igor Stravinsky's Octet, played by members of the Orpheus Chamber Orchestra at Carnegie Hall in New York. This is a live broadcast on WQXR. I'm Midge Woolsey, and with me is my colleague Terrence McKnight. He's backstage. Hi, Terrence.
Hey, Midge. How'd it sound up there?
Really nice. Very, very nice.
Yeah, you know, we've got on our website, we've got a blog running where we're asking our listeners to talk about songs. It's called Songs My Mother Taught Me. And it's interesting, this program, Stravinsky's father was an opera singer, and the next music we'll hear is by Max Bruch, and his mother was a famous singer. And then we've got Beethoven, whose father was a singer. So lots of musicians who came from musicians on this program. Mm-hmm. And with me now is a musician who we just heard from, Frank Morelli, plays bassoon in the Orpheus Chamber Orchestra. Hello, Frank.
Hello, how you doing?
So, how'd it go out there?
I think it went really well. It's a wonderful piece. It takes a lot of energy and a lot of concentration, and when you're playing it in such a wonderful space, but also such a big hall as Carnegie Hall. I think we even have to focus down a little bit more. Right, I think so, we did, too.
So you've got eight players on stage, which means you're really exposed.
Yes, it's a whole different, well, not completely different, but it's a different feeling than when one is out there with the entire orchestra. So that it's this idea of focus. I think we have to be even further focused in, and there's no downtime. With only eight of us out there, we're all staying right on top of it.
Now, I'd imagine some players that play in orchestras kind of shy away from being exposed like that. I mean...
Exactly. Well, Orpheus... well, I think there are many players that do relish this opportunity, but one of the common traits of Orpheus musicians is that many of us come from solo and chamber music backgrounds, as well as orchestral backgrounds. And so the idea of playing in these kinds of ensembles isn't so foreign to us. And so we look forward to it.
Yeah, so talk about, now I know you've written a book where you excerpted a lot of music that Stravinsky wrote for your instrument.
Yes.
What did we learn? I mean, you're playing Stravinsky all season here at Carnegie,
right,
the Orpheus,
right.
Orpheus Chamber Orchestra is. What did we learn about his writing for bassoon through the course of his tenure as
a
musician?
Stravinsky... you know, many people consider Stravinsky as the man that defined 20th century music, and he certainly defined a whole new era in the use of the bassoon. In fact, the piece that most people would probably think of as the real harbinger of things to come was The Rite of Spring, and in fact, The Rite of Spring starts with one of the most notorious and beautiful and challenging bassoon solos ever written. And so you could say he threw down the gauntlet at that moment and said, here it is. This is a whole new era.
Mm-hmm. So the next music you're playing is by Max Bruch. How much do you have to work in this piece?
Oh, well, it's a whole different type of, whole different type. Maybe it's overstated. But now the focus is on a much more of a group sound. Obviously, this is music of, you might say, romantic era. And certainly to try to be bringing out the artistic vision of our young soloists this evening.
Yeah. So, yeah, you've got a young soloist this
evening. Yeah.
This is your first time working with Ryu Goto.
He's worked with a group before, but it's the first time I have worked with him, yes.
Yeah. So how's that experience been?
Oh, it's been great. He's young and he's dynamic. It's a little bit like working with my own son, who's just about a year younger than this guy. Yeah.
Well, thanks so much, Frank, for stopping by, man. Good seeing you.
Thank you.
Okay. Mitch, so there you have it. The Orpheus Chamber Orchestra is about to go back out on stage for music by Max Bruch.
And yes, actually, Terrence, I had the chance to speak with the soloist Ryu Goto after rehearsal today, and we're going to hear that interview during intermission. Very excited to share that with all of you. It does look like the orchestra is ready to go out on stage. They'll be playing a favorite piece for violinists of all ages, Bruch's Concerto No. 1 in G minor. Bruch said that the violin, quote, can sing a melody better than a piano, and melody is the soul of music.
Yeah, and that's what we talked about, you know, these relationships between parent and child and how the music has been passed down. Well, this player that we have tonight, Ryu Goto, I'm not sure about his parents, but his sister is a very well-known violinist, Midori. And, you know, Goto himself is quite a star back in Japan. I know someone in the Orpheus Chamber Orchestra described him as being kind of the Britney Spears of that country, but I don't think he'll do any lip syncing tonight.
Yeah, and he's only 21 years old, in addition to being a world-class musician. He's a very busy senior at Harvard. He's juggling exams and his concert career right now, and he's got his black belt in karate.
Wow.
The Orpheus Chamber Orchestra taking stage now.
Hey, Mr. Goto is to my left over here. He's got his violin in his left hand. He's got his handkerchief in his left hand. He's got his bow in his left hand. He's kind of, you know, nodding at the players as they go on. He's taking his time.
Making his Carnegie Hall debut tonight.
Yeah.
Yes, lots of young women in the audience, fans of Ryu Goto, no doubt. Max Bruch's Concerto No. 1 in G minor for violin and orchestra in New York's Carnegie Hall and broadcast live on WQXR.
Thank you. Thank you.
Max Brooks, Concerto in G Minor for Violin and Orchestra, his Opus 26, played by the Orpheus Chamber Orchestra with guest violinist Ryu Goto in his Carnegie Hall debut. I'm Midge Woolsey, and we're broadcasting live from Carnegie Hall tonight on WQXR, and backstage is our own Terrence McKnight. Terrence, what's going on?
Not alone backstage. Ryu Goto just came backstage. He's standing here with his mom, and he's going back out on stage for another bow. You know, Max Brooks wrote this concerto in 1864. He conducted the premiere, and then he withdrew it and worked with violinist Josef Joachim. He wanted Joachim's advice on how to make the piece better. Joachim gave him some advice. He brought the piece back out to the public 4 years later, and Joachim played it for the first time after the revision. But he's back out on stage right now.
First of all, thanks so much for coming. I actually have to run right after this to an award ceremony. I'm not getting an award. I'm presenting an award, actually. But I didn't know this until now, but so I think I just like to play, hopefully, a quick piece. And hopefully you're not bored out of your mind already, so. And if I don't see you somewhere, then we'll see you soon.
Thank you. Thank you.
I believe he referred to that encore as a little something. Well, a little something indeed. An arrangement of variations on Paganini themes called Paganiniana. The arrangement by the great violin virtuoso Nathan Milstein. That was 21-year-old Ryu Goto in his Carnegie Hall debut tonight here on 105.9 FM WQXR. I'm Midge Woolsey here with Terrence McKnight, and we are broadcasting live.
Here's the man. He's backstage now. He's going back out on stage. He's turned over his violin to someone standing backstage, and he's going to greet the applause for a job well done. Now, Midge, you had a chance to speak with our soloist earlier today, and I believe we'll hear your interview with Mr. Goto during intermission.
Yes.
Yeah.
Very well-spoken young man, Harvard student, balancing music and education at this point in his life.
I read somewhere that he said he didn't really enjoy practicing. Did he talk to you about that?
Oh, yes. You'll hear a little something about that. Here he is once again, Ryu Goto, taking a bow. And the members of the Orpheus Chamber Orchestra still on stage and giving him a nice round of applause. Many of the audience members on their feet. It's hard for me to tell from here if it's a full standing ovation, but very, very enthusiastic. Yes, all of the members of Orpheus on their feet now and together taking a bow. Violinist Ryu Goto in his Carnegie Hall debut. Well, it's intermission here at Carnegie Hall and time for the audience to stretch their legs and for the members of Orpheus to get ready for the Beethoven Second Symphony.
Oh, yeah, that's coming up next. Beethoven number 2. I should remind our listeners that you're listening to Classical 105.9 FM, WQXR Newark and New York, and online at WQXR.org. We're supported by Carnegie Hall, presenting bass baritone Thomas Kwasthoff in a recital tomorrow at 8 p.m. His recital includes Lieder by Schubert, Brahms, and a work by Franck Martin. Tickets available at carnegiehall.org or 212-247-7800. We're also supported by Juilliard, presenting exciting pianist Gregory Duturc's New York recital debut. That's this Thursday, May 6th at 8 p.m. in Alice Tully Hall. We'll be playing Scarlatti, Debussy, Schumann, Copland, and Faya. Those tickets are 212-721-6500 or juilliard.edu. Additional support comes from Carnegie Hall, presenting Brahms chamber music performed by young artists trained by Leon Fleischer this Saturday and Sunday. Those tickets are at 212-247-7800 or carnegiehall.org. I'm Terrence McKnight here with Midge Woolsey, and there's more music to come.
Yes, indeed. Well, right after rehearsal today, I had the opportunity to meet violinist Ryu Goto, and I asked him about his performance here tonight, and given the fact that tomorrow is the 119th anniversary of Carnegie Hall, I began by asking him how it felt to be here in Carnegie Hall.
I feel great. I think I didn't have time to really expect anything until I got here, but then really sort of pre-concert, you know, everything started to kind of weigh down on me, you know, sort of the gravity of the situation. You know, I was my hometown, a lot of my friends from college and, you know, graduates, all people I knew, you know, in New York, they all came, and it was kind of, you know, scary, kind of at the same time. It was really intimate.
And exciting.
Yeah, it is exciting because, you know, I mean, it gives me a lot of kind of, you know, the sense of purpose that I'm playing for people who matter in my life. They're close to me. So
right, exactly.
I'm playing for people who matter to me, and it was particularly, I guess, important benchmark for me.
Well, I know that all of New York is waiting to hear, how did you like the stage of Carnegie Hall?
It's amazing. It really is amazing. I mean, you know, I've been here a couple times to attend concerts. Appreciated the fact that it's a huge hall, high 2000s.
Yes, 2,500 yeah. or so. And yet yeah. it feels kind of intimate.
It is. I mean, it's vertically very high, mm-hmm. and it's not too deep. Besides that, just the when I'm playing there, the sound carries so effortlessly. It's amazing. I mean, and I heard people, you know, say good things about it, but
right.
you know, you have to stand there and play there to feel the difference. Yeah, it was
pretty special.
It is very special.
Well, Ryu, let's talk a little bit about the piece that mm-hmm. you played here tonight at Carnegie Hall, the Brooke Violin Concerto. What makes the piece so special itself, and why mm-hmm. do so many violinists, almost all violinists, mm-hmm. learn that piece? Why?
For me, at least, personally, it was the first violin concertos I ever learned to play when I was four.
When you were four.
Yeah. And
we heard that.
And but yeah, you know, since then I've played it, and it's kind of one of those standards that every violinist is expected to play at some point in their life. It's a very violinistic piece.
Mm-hmm.
It's a kind of it's, you know, tailored for the violin in the sense that it brings out the best in the violin, as opposed to kind of just purely good music
mm-hmm.
that really displays the violin's kind of uniqueness. Besides that, it's just a famous piece because it's so catchy. Rhythmically very catchy. It appeals to many people.
Mm-hmm.
Over the years, I think it's become one of those pieces that it's always fresh. I mm-hmm. think everybody loves to play that. So
that's great to know. Talk about playing with Orpheus, a conductorless mm-hmm. orchestra. We should remind the listeners, no conductor there. So what was that experience like?
Yeah, I'd had the occasion of playing with them before in Japan, the Vivaldi Four Seasons.
Mm-hmm.
It's usually the kind of piece that is played with a chamber orchestra without a conductor. The great thing about Orpheus is that individually, they have, you know, they play in different orchestras outside of the Orpheus season. They have other, you know, professional careers going on.
Mm-hmm.
And they're individually extremely accomplished players and musicians. And moreover, they have the skills to cooperate with each other. So when they come together, there are such a high level of sort of individual sense of teamwork
mm-hmm.
and at the same time leadership. They actually change principles
mm-hmm.
For each piece or for each concert. So each one is a leader. Each person is, you know, sort of
highly accomplished.
Yeah, highly accomplished. And when they all come together, they're just so good that it's almost like, you know, it adds more complication to have a conductor
right.
and to play without a conductor, because they're just so coordinated that, you know, it would just be adding another element that just messes things up.
That's an interesting way to describe it. Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about the fact that you're at mm-hmm. Harvard mm-hmm. studying physics, right?
Mm-hmm.
We've been talking about the fact that you're 21. Are we getting that right?
Yes,
21 years old, studying physics. Isn't it exam time?
It is. I have exams this week, end of this week, and next week. And the week after that.
So how do you balance that, the playing of the music and working school in, et cetera, et cetera?
I think the ability to really, you know, be efficient, that's most important. Knowing how to practice, knowing how to study, even though I do, you know, I mean, saying that, I'm still a huge procrastinator. It's tough. It's not easy. I don't get to practice every day. I don't get to study every day. You know, it's just that you have to prioritize and come right before exam time. Things usually get a lot more hectic because I'm planning for concerts beginning of summer, and, you know, I have exams at the same time, and this is really kind of like the crunch period.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, besides efficiency, I'd say it's about being able to kind of switch gears very quickly, you know,
and
to be able to focus on whatever it is, you know, the matter at hand. So.
Well, speaking of focus, you have a black belt in karate.
Mm-hmm.
How has that helped your music?
Definitely. In not these sort of superficial ways where, you know, it's not like they're very similar or anything like that, but in a kind of more disciplinary kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
Psychological way, in the sense that, you know, I'm the kind of knowing that I have many things going on, it kind of, they each one helps to really balance the other.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's because I think each one functions almost as kind of a stress reliever for the other.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's that kind of like circle keeps me healthy in mind, body.
So. Yeah, and I noticed you have tremendous upper body strength, and that must really help the violin playing, because
I don't know.
At the same time, you're wonderfully graceful when you're playing. So I think it's all sort of integrated in a very wonderful way. You mentioned you grew up in New York.
I was born and raised here.
Did you listen to WQXR?
Definitely. Actually, yeah. My dad used to take me to work or to school, and sometimes to work. On days when I didn't have school, and always have WQXR on his radio. He was a violinist as well.
Mm-hmm.
At one point, he just switched gears and careers. At one, but yeah, that's how I knew about WQXR.
Well.
And a lot of times, you know, when I'm in the cabs, actually, a lot of cab drivers listen to WQXR.
Precisely,
yeah,
and we love that.
Yeah, that's
so they're going to know about Ryu Goto before you know it. Talk a little bit about the fact, as we know, you're a superstar in Japan. You grew up in New York, but right now everybody in Japan is talking about Ryu Goto. You're on television commercials, on the billboards there. So the question is, do you like that, or do you prefer being in the States where you have a little more anonymity?
It's a tough question, because living mostly in the United States, at college, at home, I'm not even exposed to that kind of, you know, fame or whatever, celebrity or whatever.
You're just a guy.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about it so much. You know, I go there sometimes, you know, people recognize me on the street, and that's that, you know. And it makes things much easier for me here, definitely,
mm-hmm.
especially because, you know, I mean, yeah, I got to do whatever I want.
You'll go buy a pair of tennis shoes without having anybody bother
yeah,
you.
Yeah, 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 definitely. So, you know, when I'm in Japan and when I sort of, you know, people recognize me or sort of treat me in a different way, it does give me a sense of appreciation for, you know, what I've been doing. It puts in perspective the kind of things that I've been doing all my life, you know, and the kind of effort that I put into it my entire life.
Mm-hmm. Just a couple more questions.
Mm-hmm.
Your sister, we know, is Midori, 17 years older, and so we're curious to know how much of an influence she was on your choice of careers here at the moment, anyway.
Well, yeah, that's I think you bring up a good point, because I think when I first began playing the violin, before I played the violin, I carried a violin case around, because I thought, I remember seeing my sister, you know, at Carnegie and all these Japanese, like everywhere, and seeing her, you know, sign autographs and all that, and take, you know, and I used to think, you know, why does she get all that and I don't? And then, you know, I thought I came to the realization that if I carried a violin case, maybe I could be like her.
That's so
And then
funny.
That's how it started, except, you know, I didn't know what I was getting myself into. It was much harder and
involved practice.
Yeah, you
duty.
Know, all that nonsense. And,
right.
you know, it's like, it was horrible, and it still is horrible. But performing is the one redeeming factor, and always the redeeming factor, of, you know, all that horrible nonsense.
Uh-huh.
And right now, you know, it's quite frankly, it's my job.
Uh-huh,
you
right.
know, that's how, you know, I make money.
Right.
Playing the violin. But it's been a part of me for so long that I don't even recognize it as kind of a job. It's my pleasure. It's my kind of lifestyle. And I don't know what life would be like without it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, my classmates are graduating. I took a year off, so they're all the guys that I really knew are graduating. And, you know, there was this cycle. You know, it was right after the economic crisis, and they're like, you know, they're looking for jobs, you know, trying to get into finance and all that. And, you know, I was like feeling the same kind of pressure. I'm like, oh, what am I going to do after graduation? What am I going to do? Of course, you know, I could keep on playing.
Right.
You know, my mom was always saying, are you going to go to grad school? Are you going to get a job? And, you know, I was like, it's strange, because it doesn't register to me
right.
as kind of a career.
Right.
And similarly for my sister, according to her, at least, she went to grad school, NYU, and NYU got her master's in psych, apparently she didn't choose her career exclusively to be music until she was 30. Which is interesting because by the time she's 30, she's quite well known.
Right.
She's pretty
absolutely
well known.
Yeah. It's an absolute by
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, so you have some time. That's the bottom line. And very quickly, tell us about your violin. What do you play?
I play a 1715 Stradivarius by name of the Experience Road or the Road.
Mm-hmm.
It was played previously by Oscar Shumsky.
Aha. Uh-huh.
And it's an amazing violin. I'm not going to say, you know, in absolute terms, you know, which violin is the best or something, but for me, there cannot be a better violin. I can say this with certainty because I used to play my sister's hand-me-down.
Mm-hmm.
I shouldn't say hand-me-down. It was a Guarneri. A
Guarnerius. The hand-me-down Guarneri.
Yeah.
I love that.
And, you know, I was reluctant to look for, you know, I didn't like that stuff, you know, just kind of looking around for violins and, you know, why do I need to do that? I have better things to do. You know, my mom was like, you know, you just got to try out these violins. And I was like, no, not this one, not this one, not this one. You know, just get bored of them within 2 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, I should also say that because most of them were Strads and, you know, they're multi-million dollar violins.
That's interesting.
But, you know, I was just not interested in it until I came across this violin.
And there was a special chemistry between you and the instrument,
I can say it by that within, you know, the first minute, I knew I needed this violin. And I need, you know, it's a very strong, a violin with a strong personality. It's very solid. It's very healthy. It's easy to carry around. It's easier to bring to different places with different climates.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't die on me. So it almost has this kind of independent feel to it. So, and it's, since it's such a great violin, I feel like, you know, sometimes if I don't play it right or if I, you know, slack off too much, the violin will play me instead of me playing the violin.
Well, please don't leave it in a cab.
Well,
we've heard stories.
Yeah, you've definitely heard stories, I'm sure.
Okay, and tell us very quickly, where are you off to next?
After this, go back for exams, and then go to Japan, Vienna. I'm playing at the Musikverein there,
mm-hmm.
the Vienna Symphony. Japan, I'm doing, you know, a bunch of stuff. And then Korea, Taiwan, in China, I think.
Okay.
I'm going to be in New York for, like, most of the later half of summer, too, though.
Well, again, congratulations, and thanks for making our broadcast so special, and we look forward to...
No, thanks so much.
Well,
I mean,
we look forward to having you on WQXR again many, many times in the
thank
future.
You.
So
I hope you liked it.
Oh, loved it.
Thank you.
Well, needless to say, I really enjoyed my chat with Ryu Goto, recorded after rehearsal today. It's intermission here at Carnegie Hall, and you're listening to a live broadcast of the Orpheus Chamber Orchestra. I'm Midge Woolsey, and this is WQXR 105.9 FM and WQXR.org, Newark and New York. And right now, we're listening to Ryu Goto playing Paganini's Introduction and Variations on Nel cor più non mi sento, his Opus 28. Violinist Ryu Goto, our soloist tonight here at Carnegie Hall. WQXR is supported by Carnegie Hall, presenting Brahms chamber music performed by young artists trained by Leon Fleischer this Saturday and Sunday. Tickets at 212-247-7800 or carnegiehall.org. WQXR support also comes from Plaza Jewish Community Chapel, the community-owned and operated Jewish funeral chapel located in New York, providing services and guidance to the bereaved for the past 9 years. Services available 24 hours a day, including funeral arrangements in the metropolitan area, graveside, and around the world. More information at 212-769-4400 or at plazajewish.org, where webcasting is available. Plaza Jewish Community Chapel, a service, not a business. I'm Midge Woolsey here with Terrence McKnight, and we're broadcasting live from Carnegie Hall on WQXR. And the final piece on this concert by the Orpheus Chamber Orchestra tonight is Beethoven's Symphony No. 2. The symphony was mostly written in 1802 during Beethoven's stay at Heiligenstadt, a rural retreat outside of Vienna. This was a time when Beethoven's deafness was becoming more apparent, and he began to realize that it might be incurable. His mood was morose, according to Ferdinand Ries, the devoted student who visited him there.
Yeah, Mitch, you know, you talked about Ferdinand Ries, and he was a guy who came from Beethoven's hometown. Beethoven had been in Vienna about 10 years when he wrote this symphony. And earlier in our program, we heard music by Stravinsky. It's a composition that he first took a stab at in the 1920s. He revised it 30 years later. We heard music by Max Bruch that he composed in 1864. He revised that in 68. Well, Beethoven wrote this music around 1801, 1803. He conducted the debut in 1803. And a critic wrote that this Symphony No. 2 is a work full of new original ideas of great strength, sensitive in orchestration and intellectual in concept, but one that surely would benefit from the abbreviation of some passages and the total deletion of others. Well, Beethoven didn't revise the score. You know, in fact, when Beethoven got to Vienna, you know, he was known as a pianist and as an improviser. And a lot of the pianists of that day, you know, they wanted to challenge Beethoven. They thought that he wasn't finished as a composer. So he studied with Haydn, he studied with Salieri, and about a handful of composers, the best composers and theorists in Vienna at the time. And so he refined his style. And when he composed his second symphony, another critic wrote that it was hideously writhing, wounded dragon that refuses to die. Well, the symphony has been around since then, since 1803. And it's one where Beethoven kind of delves into that period, into a second period, where his music starts to get away from the classical style, away from the style of Haydn and Mozart, and he takes on his own voice in this music. And we'll hear that music coming up next by the Orpheus Chamber Orchestra on this concert from Carnegie Hall right here on WQXR Classical 105.9 FM. And the musicians, you can probably hear them, Midge. We've got the full band to my left.
Yeah, we should remind people that you are backstage at Carnegie Hall. It's kind of neat back there, isn't it?
It is very neat back here because how you doing, sir? I made some friends back here. You know, we do this often, and, you know, this year the orchestra is playing music by Stravinsky throughout the season at Carnegie, and that's how we began this program. But we also had a great soloist, Ryu Goto. You guys got to have a conversation with him. So, you know, this is the last piece on this program tonight, and it's always a festive environment back here, which is kind of fun to watch and fun to listen to, I hope, for our listeners.
Right. They sound sort of relaxed, as though they're ready to play a familiar piece and have a good time with it, I think, right?
I think so. You know, and another interesting thing about this piece is Beethoven, you know, as I mentioned, he goes into some new territory. He replaces the minuet, you know, in the third movement. He replaces it with a scherzo. That's something more common, you know, it was a common dance in the villages. So right away he's doing his own thing in this music.
You can hear the cell phone announcement going off in the hall. Terrence, you've been spending a lot of time doing live broadcasts these days, right? You were at Lincoln Center last night.
Beautiful concert last night. Jordy Savall, his ensemble and guest musicians, playing music from Jerusalem, you know, representing Christian, Islamic, and Jewish faiths. And tonight something very interesting happened back here. There were a number of folks backstage who didn't speak English, but you know what? We were all in the same groove of the musical language. You could see us all responding to that music earlier. Well, now the orchestra's ready for music by Beethoven.
Yes, and they're ready to perform Beethoven's Symphony No. 2 in D major, his Opus 36. We are at Carnegie Hall in New York, and we're broadcasting live on WQXR.
Thank you. Thank you.
on Classical 105.9 FM WQXR. That was Beethoven's Symphony No. 2, played by the Orpheus Chamber Orchestra live at Carnegie Hall. I'm Midge Woolsey, and I'm here with Terrence McKnight. He's backstage at Carnegie Hall.
Midge, all that fanfare was first heard April 5th, 1803. Beethoven conducted that music. It's a music that one of the critics said, he could have left out some of those passages. It's a little too long, but that music has been around since Beethoven composed it. It's one of his important symphonies. They're all important. And we heard it live here at Carnegie Hall, played by the Orpheus Chamber Orchestra. This is our last broadcast of the Orpheus Chamber Orchestra from Carnegie Hall this season. And hopefully Midge will be back next season. They've got some great guest solos coming up, and you can hear how the audience appreciates this orchestra.
Yes, the orchestra back on stage now for another round of applause. The audience very, very appreciative. Such a talented group.
Yep. Next season, Garrick Olson will be performing with the orchestra in October, and in December, soprano Kate Royal will join the Orpheus Chamber Orchestra next season. Vadim Glusman will be performing, and lots of great music played by this orchestra. And I should let our listeners know that you can always go online to our website, listen to these broadcasts from Carnegie Hall anytime. They're on demand. Just go to wqxr.org. The Orpheus Chamber Orchestra performing here at Carnegie Hall lives on our website at WQXR.
Well, it's time to thank some of the folks who helped us out tonight. We'd like to begin by thanking the staffs of the Orpheus Chamber Orchestra and Carnegie Hall, and special thanks to Leszek Wojciech and to writer Kaoru Harigaya of Yomi Time in New York.
And the staff from WQXR includes technical director Edward Haber, recording engineers Damon Whittemore, Noriko Okabe, George Wellington, Kristen Muller, and our stage manager was Emily Krell. The broadcast producer and director is Eileen De La Hunty. I'm Terrence McKnight, and Limor Tomer is WQXR's executive producer for music. And Midge, it's always a pleasure working with you.
Our first time together at Carnegie Hall, right, Terrence?
Won't be the last.
Okay. I'm Midge Woolsey. Thanks so much for joining me and Terrence McKnight for this beautiful night live from Carnegie Hall. We're going to send it back to Annie Bergen, who's in the studio now. You're listening to Classical 105.9 FM, WQXR, Newark and New York. Good night.